Welcome to How to Cover an Election, where four broadcast journalism students tackle an election campaign for the first time.
Each week, we're talking to experts in their fields as we look at all the key themes for the media in the build-up to the polls.
We'll also talk you through our experiences of election coverage as the contest heats up.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of How to Cover an Election before the actual election itself. There's a certain end of term feel in the studio today, and this is a little preview of what's to come in this bumper episode.
And at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I rubbed my thighs or something. I was talking, and I just thought, what's that all over my hand?
When you cover presidential elections, you don't often get to talk to the president. In fact, never. I remember during the Obama election suggesting to one of his staff that he might like to talk to the BBC, and they literally laughed. They said,
it's a huge operation, which literally has a cast of hundreds. It's a really, really big, key night.
All the spin stops, and for the first time probably in all year, every politician you speak to is absolutely honest with you. They'll tell you where they've done badly, they'll tell you where they're losing, they'll tell you what's gone wrong, they'll criticise their own leadership. Election night is the best thing.
You'll be hearing from all those people later on in what is a jam-packed episode. Now, you may notice as we carry on that there are only three of us here today. Sadly, Gareth couldn't make it. It has been a busy week for all of us here, but he'll be back very soon. First, though, before those people you just heard, we'll be hearing from Gitto Harry, who is the former Director of Communications for Boris Johnson when he was Mayor of London and is now a broadcaster for S4C. You may know him as the man on social media who got Boris Johnson to say his oven-ready deal was ready to be put in the poppity-ping, which is, of course, Welsh for microwave. But we spoke to him and we started by asking him what advice he had for us covering our first ever general election.
Don't take anything for granted. A lot can change during an election. You go in thinking it's been very clearly framed because a lot of people have paid a lot of money to frame it like that. But the things that are most memorable in elections, and I've covered them over the years, I've seen some of them behind the scenes, most of them as a journalist, is what you remember most is something you could have never predicted. The time when Gordon Brown as Prime Minister had a microphone on and he insulted a lifelong Labour supporter. The time when the Deputy Prime Minister and the Labour Party, John Prescott, threw a plunge and floored somebody else who was in the crowd waiting for him. But the times when people fall over. And this election, even in that hotly contested field, is one of the least predictable ever. So just be open-minded. Don't take anything for granted. What's really hard is that this is the time when the political parties are at their most disciplined, at their most focused, when the messages are most refined. And even people like Boris Johnson, who generally is more spontaneous and free-flowing and organic than most, tends to stick to the script. So it's very hard to get people to be honest with you and to come off the script and to tell you what they really think. We're in Cardiff tonight. Jo Swinson is telling us she could go from having 21 MPs to being Prime Minister. Even Lloyd George, in his heyday as one of the most successful Prime Ministers ever, and certainly the most successful Liberal leader, never secured the number of Liberal MPs that she's trying to win now. So it's important to take what they say with a pinch of salt and yet not turn into some nasty, cynical, sort of, you know, over-suspicious journalist.
What's been the biggest highlight for you covering elections over the years?
I enjoy them because the politicians are obliged to get out of their, you know, privileged, protected life, out of the Palace of Westminster, out of Downing Street, and go back to the people. It's very, very humbling for them. It's the essence of our system that in the end, however flawed, however messy, we, every one of us, no matter how well educated, how well informed, get to give our verdict on these people who then have 4 or 5 years to rule over us. And there's something quite wonderful about that. And of course, they have to try extremely hard. They may forget all about us within a week of being back at Westminster. I suspect not on this occasion, but they have to come to us and fight hard for us as journalists as well.
That was Gitto Harry talking to us a while ago. Now, it was interesting that he said anything can still happen. And he mentioned those famous events like John Prescott punching a voter, which I think actually made his approval ratings go up, or Gordon Brown calling someone a bigoted woman, which definitely made them go down. Ev, we know even this far out from an election, even when the election is just tomorrow, anything can still happen, despite what the polls say.
Exactly, yeah. You know, all we need is that one little media mishap or a microphone being left on or a phone recording sort of coming out of a blue out of nowhere. Anything can happen until the polls close and we know then for definite what the score's going to be.
Because, Chloe, there's been some big news stories even in the past couple of days.
Yeah, so we've had Boris Johnson refusing to look at the reporter's phone with the picture of that horrific picture of the young boy in A&E. And then also you've had Ashworth make those comments about Jeremy Corbyn today, which he's had to backtrack on and apologise for repeatedly. And, you know, all of this happening very close to the election can affect what people do in the polls, because you're standing there with the ballot paper in front of you. It's a bit of a... You know, some people, I know lots of people, when they vote in the referendum, it was an impulse decision whether or not they voted Leave or Remain. And I think that's going to have an impact.
But do you think maybe, like, we're talking about media mishaps or what have you. You know, we talk about the John Prescott incident, we talk about the Gordon Brown incident. Have we actually had one in this campaign where we can fairly say, in maybe 20, 25 years' time, we'll look back and say, oh, we'll remember that election because so-and-so did so-and-so? Because I don't think we have. I think we've only had little moments.
It's like the bacon sandwich moment, isn't it? Yeah. I don't think there's been that one moment. And if there has been moments, they've been quite serious stories as opposed to something like the bacon sandwich or the bigoted woman that's just like a mishap. It's been more like stories that have been created by social media and whipped up that have then become these big defining things, as opposed to any kind of mistake that politicians made.
And you've had events as well, such as the awful London Bridge attack and then the floods in Yorkshire as well, which have been big news stories in themselves and have broken up the election campaigning. So in terms of media mishaps, I think the major overwhelming theme has been whether or not we can trust all of the parties.
But I think it's like Gita Harry said, isn't it, that, you know, just be open-minded, anything can happen. And as much as the polls were tightening last week, they're now stretching out again. It looks like, if you were to believe the polls, there'll be a big Conservative win. But, I mean, anything can happen still.
Well, I was just about to say is, but we've still got, what is it, 24 hours left until polling day. Anything can happen in that 24 hours. Mm-hmm. All we need is that one big story, that one big moment, and it could change the course of the thing. It might never come, though.
And it's worth remembering that Hillary Clinton was 11 points clear of Donald Trump a week out from the US election, and then the James Comey letter was released and she
Well, look how that
lost.
Ended out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I remember the absolute shock of covering that in student media when the American election happened, and it was absolute shock. And so, yeah, it really does show anything can happen.
Well, we should move on because we've got so much to pack into this episode, and we've got a very exciting interview next with the presenter of BBC Radio 4's Today programme, Justin Webb, who spoke to us about this general election and about how things might be changing in the future. Obviously, you've had experience covering a presidential election in America. How does that differ from covering one in the UK?
I tell you what, we are becoming more presidential, and not necessarily in a good way. So when you cover presidential elections, you don't often get to talk to the president. In fact, never. I remember during the Obama election suggesting to one of his staff that he might like to talk to the BBC, and they literally laughed. They said. But the risk is that we're going in that direction. We're not anywhere near there yet, but we do need to hear. We need to have interviews with Boris Johnson, with Jeremy Corbyn, with Jo Swinson. There are to and fro interviews where you can actually follow up, where you can put people on the spot. Now, there'll be one or two, and I think they'll do them with our programme, and they'll do them with Andrew Neil. But I'm not sure that there are enough of those. And the risk then is that everything is chopped up into stuff that can go on social media, and the candidates are able to avoid proper interaction. And I don't mean getting shouted at, because that doesn't really count as anything that anyone really gets anything from in the end, but actually proper interaction with someone who is well briefed on what their policies are. So, yeah, I mean, we are in danger of heading towards the American direction. I hope we don't go there.
I mean, are candidates repeating themselves more nowadays, the soundbites, or is it just that every campaign speech is broadcast, so they can't have the same stump speech for 2 weeks?
No, I think they're repeating themselves more, and I think there's a kind of technical, practical reason. You see it in the House of Commons. With Prime Minister's questions and just the general standard of debate, actually. People have got one eye on social media, and they have on our programme too. They want to get their sound bites out and that be done with it. And the fact that they sometimes don't answer a question, sometimes almost painfully don't answer a question, you're sort of thinking, oh, for goodness sake, you sound like such a prat not answering it. But even so, they won't, because of that social media pressure and discipline, I suppose, as well. You know, we go in and out of these things. I wouldn't say it's a catastrophe, but we have got to be mindful of it.
And for us covering an election for the very first time, I mean, what would your tips be? Where do we look? Where do we go? What should we ignore?
The tip is to talk to people after the politician has gone about what they actually thought of the visit. In Cardiff in 2017, I had this amazing morning in a baker's bakery where it was obvious after we'd had our sort of formal discussions on air, and they all said, you know, all the things that you kind of expect people to say on air, I don't trust them, etc., etc. Afterwards, I said, come on then, what do you really think? And they just said, oh, nobody cares about us, we don't care. We feel utterly left behind. And it was fascinating. And the idea that any party could say that anyone in that bakery really strongly supported them was completely for the birds. So that's the thing. It's to get to what people behind the scenes and those trends in opinion behind the scenes and level of commitment as well, actually, or the opposite of lack of commitment. That's what gives you a kind of picture of what's going on.
What do you think the biggest challenges, what we face in broadcasting in years to come over elections and anything else?
The biggest challenge is from social media is to what extent broadcasters can still manage to ply their trade when there is so much pressure, number one, to chop everything up into small segments, meaningless segments, but number two as well, that what social media has done to us is made us less able to engage with the other side. One of the really interesting things about the Today programmes, we get endless people, as I say endless, a lot of people complaining, not about an interview, but why is that person even being heard? People write in and say, or tweet and say, I had to switch off my radio because I couldn't stand listening to X, Y, or Z. That's a problem for broadcasting, which is about engagement, and it is about getting people to hear things that surprise them, annoy them, etc. And if they're just switched off, we're all a bit screwed, really.
Justin Webb talking to us there. And I wanted to start with something he said when he was talking about the difference between British and American elections. And he said that we were definitely getting more presidential, but we haven't quite reached the American stage yet. And I thought, I wondered what you had to say about the idea that elections are becoming more presidential, because we've almost seen the leaders ducking interviews in this campaign.
I think we might have seen them ducking, but in terms of maybe a style point where I've looked at is, but when I've seen these press gatherings at large factories or community groups or whatever it is, well, especially the larger factory type of ones, it's a lot more presidential in the sense that the leader is in the middle, the crowd are around him, and it does play into that rally type of scene, if you sort of get what I mean. It's like, I think I'll agree with Justin Webb, but it hasn't gone quite as far as the US presidential type of bravado they have there, because I don't think we're nowhere near that. But I think there has been a slight shift towards that, definitely, yes.
I mean, we saw a lot of people on the street when they get vox popped or get surveyed often say that one of the main reasons they won't vote Labour is Corbyn, and one of the main reasons they won't vote Tory is Boris. So is it almost presidential but in a bad way? Isn't that what's putting people off?
I think it's an indication that voters are looking at the bigger picture as who's going to be in power rather than who the representatives are. And the fact that how some candidates are trying to play down that, especially some Labour candidates who are kind of fighting against the negativity around Corbyn, saying, actually, look, you're voting for me as your local candidate rather than Jeremy Corbyn, and the local candidates can work more on that side of things.
It's almost a quirk in our system, though, isn't it, that you are voting for a local representative, but you are also implicitly voting for Prime Minister.
Yeah, exactly.
But what do you think about the fact that leaders have ducked debates? We saw Boris Johnson has not done a number of debates and Corbyn's pulled out of a few.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, really. If Johnson ain't going to go, Corbyn ain't going to go. We're not going to put each other under pressure in a sense, but if so-and-so isn't going to go, they're not going to feel morally obliged to go to the next debate. And as well, it's a chance for them to, you know, mess up and possibly have these problems, which they could have.
And they have done head-to-head debates, haven't they, for the first time ever.
Yeah, which was a bit surprising, really, considering all the impartiality type of thing and having everybody on a panel. But I just wanted to pick up quickly in the sense that Justin also went on about sound bites that are dominating our media and things like that. You know, even though Corbyn and Johnson haven't been there, they've all blurted out the same lines. Mm-hmm. And we always hear, get Brexit done, for the many, not the few, and all that. So it doesn't matter who's there. As long as somebody's there is going, get it done.
Or we're on your side.
We're on your side or what have you. It doesn't make a difference, does it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a lot to do with social media, having short videos like on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like you've seen today. I mean, what was it? What was trending earlier? It was Boris Actually. And the spoof that he's done on Love Actually. And, you know, it's short, funny clips like that that are just getting out on social media. And I think I've noticed that the Labour campaign, especially on Instagram, there's been an emphasis on having pretty looking graphics that people will want to share in their stories and stuff. And I think that's been Labour's strength on social media.
I think you mentioned on earlier pods, Will, when we were speaking to the Brexit staffers about debates in general. They're just there looking for that soundbite for PR anyway.
What's the social media video going to be? I mean, I read something interesting this week that I thought I'd get your thoughts on, which is that in recent times, every successful political campaign, the slogan has been a verb. It's been proactive. So just to give you some examples, the Leave versus Remain. Remain was something like Stronger Together, or I can't remember what it was, but it was passive.
Staying in.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Whereas the Leave campaign was Take Back Control. And the same in America. Hillary Clinton's was Stronger Together and Trump's was Make America Great Again. 2017, neither had a verb in the campaign, but the argument is now Boris has got Get Brexit Done, whereas Corbyn's only got, what's he got for the many, not the few, or for the we're on your
side? For the
side?
Many, not the few
it's,
was the
it's,
last
it's
one.
A good, it's a good slogan, undeniably,
build
but it's passive.
Future?
Build a brighter future, but it's passive as opposed to proactive.
So now that you've said that, Will, it doesn't, like, it's something I've never thought about, but it doesn't surprise me. I think having the verb and the actual, you know, taking action, I think that does, like, psychologically appeal to people. And you can see why, if you compare slogans now, okay, maybe we've got the benefit of hindsight, but I think they do work better with verbs.
Definitely. And I don't know if anyone saw the Channel 4 drama where Benedict Cumberbatch played Dominic Cummings. And there's the big, a lot is made of the scene where they initially have the slogan, Take Control, as the Brexit slogan, and then he has the idea of putting back, take back control, and suddenly, like, oh, that's what people will go for because it seems like some active thing. Just moving on to what Justin Webb said about the future of journalism in these elections. I mean, he pointed towards social media as being the biggest challenge, and that was kind of emphasised a couple of days ago when they came out with reports that Matt Hancock's advisor had been punched in the face by some paid Labour activists. And this was tweeted out by some of the biggest political journalists around the country, only for it to be revealed on the video that actually it was a kind of misunderstanding and no such thing had happened. And obviously these journalists can make mistakes, so we're not having a go at them. But it is interesting to see how something can get traction so quickly.
Yeah, and I remember seeing that all go out on Twitter and then finding the video and going to watch the video and then watching it, having to watch it a couple of times, trying to, like, where's the punch? Does it not being there?
There was no punchline, was there, really, in the grand scheme of things? You know, it was just, I watched it and I saw it and I saw all these people tweeting about it. And, you know, in today's world, for us as journalists going forward, we've just got to be so, so careful. Anything can be picked up. You know, we can pick a smartphone up, we can pick whatever we want up, get the camera out, get the video out, and the evidence is there.
And then equally, there's also been on social media people attempting to claim that the boy on the floor of A&E was actually faked as well. There's been that side of things as well.
Well, that's the flip side, isn't it? As soon as one thing is shown not to be true, people start doubting everything. And that's also really dangerous, which is that if people are going to start calling it fake news, then where do we go from there? Because you can't get anything through.
You're listening to How to Cover an Election. Follow us on social media and listen to us on Spotify.
And we should shift towards the election night itself now, and we're going to hear from BBC Wales political editor Felicity Evans. She's going to give us a bit of an insight into what happens on the night and how the BBC can keep things interesting for viewers. And we started by asking her, what is the biggest challenge in covering an election?
I think for all elections, the big challenge for journalists is trying to keep it interesting for viewers, readers, listeners. Because, you know, for those of us who live in politics day in, day out, you know, you can assume that there's an interest out there when really there isn't. People have got, you know, all sorts of things to worry about, all sorts of different interests. And I think that's particularly true at this election, where there is a sense of frustration with all the political parties because of the impasse that we've seen at Westminster over the last 3.5 years. So it's a challenge, I think, really, to make sure that you can try to explain what are quite complex things in understandable ways, but also accessible ways where people are actually interested in finding out more about this stuff.
How many elections have you covered personally? And has there been a personal highlight or something which is really memorable that stuck out to you?
Well, one way or another, I've probably done, if you just count general elections, I've probably done maybe the last 3 or 4 in different capacities. And, you know, there's one I remember last 2017, I was BBC Wales Television does its own results programme, of course, and I was the presenter in what we call the soft area that night, which is on the sofa where, you know, different guests come in shifts, because obviously it's a 10-hour programme. They normally come in for two-hour shifts. They sit down, you talk to them, they go away, the new lot come in. And I have a moth problem in my house, clothes moths, and I got a man in to basically, you know, spray all the chemicals everywhere that day, because obviously journalists don't work on election day itself because we can't really broadcast. So I thought that's a great day to do it. So he told me to get the animals out of the house and all of that. I did all of that, but I'd left my television outfit on the bed so it was ready to go. And at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I just sort of, you know, I just sort of, I don't know, I rubbed my thighs or something. I was talking and I just thought, what's that all over my hand? And then I realised that whatever it was that had been sprayed around the house was all over my trousers, and I was sitting in it, and I had about another 6 hours to go on live television sitting in these chemical-sodden trousers. So maybe that's a low light rather than a highlight, but it's a very vivid memory.
We're covering the four Cardiff constituencies, and we know that Cardiff Central and Cardiff North are going to be really big student seats. How much of a factor do you think they could play in deciding the outcomes? Because obviously Cardiff North is a very swing seat, and obviously last time it broke the type of pattern which it's already had.
Yeah, they're going to be two really interesting seats. I think possibly Cardiff North, as you suggest, much more volatile than Cardiff Central, simply because, you know, there's such a big majority for the incumbent in Cardiff Central that it would take a major swing to shift that seat, wouldn't it? However, nothing's impossible in politics. It's so unpredictable at the moment. You know, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it's Cardiff North much more on a knife edge, I think. And, you know, that brings in all sorts of interesting things, doesn't it? Like the issue around Remainer pacts, and the fact that, you know, Labour MPs who have been very pro-Remain are seeing Remainer parties stand against them and that sort of thing. You know, will that in some seats, you know, mean that a pro-Brexit Conservative candidate gets through? So that, I think Cardiff North in particular throws up some really interesting questions around the tactics that we've seen. And in fact, you know, it's going to throw up a really interesting question about what voters decide to do in terms of how tactical they want to be in terms of the way they vote.
Mm-hmm. People are obviously calling this election a big standout election in terms of Brexit and things like that. Does coverage vary between elections, and how much does it seem to vary? Are there certain different factors you have to take into account with each individual election, or is it kind of the same kind of standard coverage?
Well, obviously, you know, in terms of the rules of trying to be fair to all the parties, you know, parity of coverage, that sort of thing, those rules are fairly standard. The fact that we're having an election virtually every couple of years now just shows the unpredictability and volatility that we have in politics at the moment, and I think that's what makes this particular election unusual. You know, as journalists, we tend to talk everything up as everything being fascinating and exciting and all of that, because, you know, we want people to engage with it. But I think people know that sometimes, you know, we're maybe overselling it. In this election, I don't think we are overselling it, because politics is so unpredictable at the moment. I don't think you're going to find anyone willing to stick their neck out and make any kinds of predictions about what the outcome of this is going to be. And I think that's what makes this a particularly interesting and exciting election, is that the truth is we don't really know what's going to happen.
That was, of course, BBC Wales political editor Felicity Evans talking to us about how the election night stays interesting. And we got a bit of experience on how the BBC keeps their viewers interested this week. Ev, tell everyone what we've been up to.
This week, we went up to BBC Wales's studios in Llandaff to have a look around at their election facilities, and with James Williams, who is the Welsh language news presenter and political correspondent, as well as the Sunday Politics host for the Welsh region. He's been grilling the five leaders over the last couple of weeks. And one of the coolest things we've probably done so far on this podcast or in this campaign,
definitely,
is we had to little fiddle on the green screens. Mm-hmm. And that was just unbelievably unbelievable.
So you can see some pictures on our Twitter and Instagram that we'll put up. Basically, we walked into this massive, big, it was almost like a warehouse room. And there was just the biggest green screen you can think of there.
And on the floor and on the walls.
Yeah, on the floor, walls. There was even bits of carpet or that on the side that they were using as well, and putting in and out. And basically a map of Wales had been taped out in green tape on the floor so you could look at the outline of Wales. And James basically showed us how he was going to illustrate some of the results coming in, some of the previous results, and keep things interesting for the viewers, and walk across the map of Wales, walk to little constituencies, bar graphs would appear. But the way you'd have to do this is that you'd have to look at himself on a TV screen as he's walking on the map, and it's all backwards, and it was the most complicated thing ever.
It looks so hard, doesn't it? Because if he wants to point to the right on TV, he has to point to the left in real life. Everything's opposite. So that was hard to start with. But then it's not just the map. He's also got taped out where the door of number 10 Downing Street will be when they put that animation on. He's also got the House of Commons benches taped out.
That was the coolest thing we did, in a sense, but the production guys who were there, we had a little bit of a play around with stuff, and we chucked a chair on the set and chucked some green rug over it, and it made it look like we were actually sitting on the benches at the House of Commons.
We'll have to put the pictures up on our social media.
It was really funny.
But at the same time, I mean, it was so much fun, but it gives you a real appreciation of what the job that he's got to do to stay on top of everything. Not only is he doing all of that with all these different animations, but he's also doing it in English and then again in Welsh.
Yeah, and the fact that he'd taken a week now before the election, the whole week before is just him rehearsing, knowing where to walk, what animation's going to pop up, all of the tech guys there, and they were honestly like really lovely and welcoming to us, letting us have a walk around, have a go at gesturing and pointing and trying to work it all out ourselves. And I'm not surprised that it takes a week of rehearsals to get together, and it's really going to make you appreciate it, like watching it on election night.
And if you want to see some of his early efforts, they are actually on the BBC website, a little preview of the Welsh sheets on that green screen, so you can see exactly what we're talking about. But we should move on to perhaps the oldest friend in terms of friend of the show, Adrian Masters, who is appearing yet again on the podcast. And we asked him what advice he would give us for the election and just why he loves election night so much.
Enjoy it. They are elections are really strange things because you've got all the politicians, all the political parties, they all want to speak to you, but they want to tell you things which are not necessarily true. Not that they're out and out lying, but they're going to give you all kinds of spin and all kinds of messaging. So you've got to keep on top of that, try and think, okay, what is the challenge for every person you're speaking to? But just enjoy the fact it takes you all around the country, whether it's Wales or all around the UK, and get to meet people. Because very often, as you'll find in a life of journalism, people don't want to speak to you. During an election campaign, they're desperate to speak to you.
What do you think the biggest challenge for modern journalism covering an election is?
Working out what the truth is or what's going on. Because, it's always the same in elections. It's all about spin and sending and passing a message and that sort of thing. And that's always your job, is to try to work through that. But it's ramped up massively. People that you know very well, you will have got to know very well, and you know they're decent human beings, you know they're perfectly sensible and honest, they'll be saying things to you and you think, how can you keep a straight face while you're telling me this? And that's your thing. Keep that on top all the time, on top of your mind all the time.
How sceptical do you have to be? Is there a point where you become too sceptical? Or
I'm not an ultra cynic. A lot of journalists are. I'm not an ultra cynic. I think most people in politics are going into it for the right reasons. They've got noble ambitions. They may get waylaid somewhere along the lines, but sceptical rather than cynical. I think that's the way to do it. If you get too cynical, you start thinking, well, why am I bothering doing this? You know, and actually, it's actually a good thing that people are wanting to stand for election. I want to encourage them to do that, but challenge them as well.
So in terms of election night, do you have any tips for us?
I don't always like election campaigns. I love election night because at 10 o'clock, when the polls close, this is it. Now, look, if you just look behind you, Joe Swinson, the leader of the Lib Dems, is walking past with Jane Dodds, the Welsh Liberal Democrat leader. That's why elections are quite good. You see, that sort of thing happens. Anyway, I've distracted. 10 o'clock on election night, all the spin stops. And for the first time, probably in all year, every politician you speak to is absolutely honest with you. They'll tell you where they've done badly, they'll tell you where they're losing, they'll tell you what's gone wrong, they'll criticise their own leadership. Election night is the best thing because all the spin drops, all the pretense drops away, and that's when you can put up with all the rest of the nonsense in politics all year round just for election night. It's like, I don't know, it's my version of the World Cup, the Eurovision Song Contest, Disneyland, everything, all in one. I love it.
So you heard from Adrian Masters there just how much he does love election nights. And of course, we do as well. But there is a real responsibility in these campaigns, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a massive responsibility for us as journalists. You know, we've got to go out there. We've got to take in all the spin, all the PR, all the press releases, everything you can think of. And we've got to divulge this down into something which is simple, effective, understandable, and mainly, more than anything, engaging. And as I say, as we touched on a little bit earlier with Felicity, with having variety and things like that, this is how we're going to have audiences, or we're going to keep hold of audiences and get engagement, is by having this variety. But that is a massive responsibility for us going forward as journalists.
It is a bit like Gitta Harry said, though, isn't it? That once we get to the actual election night, that's why Adrian Masters loves it. It's because all the spin is over, all the guard is down. And Mark O'Callaghan will talk a little bit about this more in just a second. But it is that it's finally all these inner thoughts are being unleashed.
Yeah, and it's the fact that, and like Adrian said, you'll be able to talk to politicians and candidates that are off the record at that point, because it won't matter, the election's over. Well, it won't matter to an extent, because the election is over, the campaigning is done, and they'll be self-critical, which of course you cannot do when you're campaigning.
They will be honest.
Honest, yeah, actually
think,
honest.
Or at least more honest than before. but let's move on to the very final interview of this massive episode, which we're very grateful that you're still listening to, if you are still listening. Former head of news and current affairs at BBC Wales, Mark O'Callaghan, who gave us a real insight into what it's like to be on the floor, on the set, on an election night. So would it be all right for you to just take us through the week in the build-up to the election and then election night itself?
Yeah, I mean, election periods are really unusual and odd times for journalists and journalistic organisations, because during the campaigns, and you've covered this in previous podcasts, you have to ensure there's due impartiality and that all the parties get a fair crack of the whip, and you put in place as well a sort of system to look at complaints. You also put in place a grid to make sure you're covering all the issues. You're making sure you're covering the country. You're making sure you're covering all the significant swing seats. And then you put in parallel work on the night itself. And on the night itself, you tend to have big programmes going on from about 10 o'clock at night till 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. They haven't necessarily got an end point for television and radio. And of course, you've also got social media blasting out on different platforms, with Twitter and Facebook, etc., giving people information along the way. Now, it's a huge operation, which literally has a cast of hundreds, because there's not just the people who are at the counts or the people interviewing politicians throughout the night, or people in the sort of green rooms, etc., etc. There's all the technical infrastructure, etc., etc. It's a really, really big key night. So 10 o'clock comes, and suddenly you've got a kind of free run at it. And what tends to happen now is you've got the exit polls. And the exit polls make some sort of suggestion as to how the night will unfold. Yeah, and it's a really difficult thing to predict. You know, so there's 650 seats up for grabs. You could have one party in ascendancy, or it could be too close to call. But suddenly you've got this moment. And polls are quite difficult things, because sometimes they can be right and sometimes they can be wrong.
I mean, does that moment define the next couple of hours of coverage? Because obviously there's been some shocking ones recently. I remember in 2015, I think Miliband and Cameron were neck and neck going into the night, and then the exit poll came out, and it was a completely surprising result.
They can be, or they can be, or they can call it right. I mean, the one I remember a number of years ago was when the poll said that the Lib Dems would do particularly bad. I remember the late Paddy Ashton was on the panel, and he said, if it turns out that way, I'll eat my hat. Well, much hat eating ensued. Now, I mean, you can't blame Paddy Ashton or indeed any politician for doing that, because they've been brought in for a specific purpose. They're there to big up their party and their party's chances. And they will do that valiantly until it's absolutely a fool's errand to continue doing that. And they've either done very badly or they've done really well. And if you you know, the first few hours of the election night is a bit like watching paint dry because nothing has really happened. So, as I say, time is a bit elastic in that sometimes it goes very, very slowly in these programs and sometimes it goes very quickly. But you get to about 3, 4, 5 in the morning and suddenly you've got an absolute torrent of results coming in and everything moves really quickly. Now, if you've got your political panel, something happens really interesting, which is worth looking at. At some point, a presenter will say something like, it looks like it's a bad night for, or it looks like it's a good night for. Now, what they're offering the political panelists is the opportunity to wave the white flag and say, it looks as if we're not doing very well, we're going to have to regroup. And then the mask slips a bit.
And, I mean, for you personally, in your role, I mean, how many hours are you staying up for? Are you from the morning of the election? What if something happens, as in 2010, when there are these followed by 5 days of tense negotiations? Is that just a week of running on adrenaline while this all happens?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, as human beings and journalists, you like a nice, neat story, like a nice narrative arc. You like a beginning, a middle, and an end. Elections aren't like that. They're totally unpredictable. They're chaotic. So even though you like to frame the narrative, and I think what you're doing as a journalist and also your job as a producer is to try and make sense of what's going on, you've also got to be pretty nimble and flexible and react to circumstances. Because you're either going to have a party will win the election, a party will lose the election, or you won't get a clear result. And then, as you say, you might have days of negotiation between different parties to see if they can form a coalition or a loose alliance. I mean, you know, if you look at Europe, it can go on for days, weeks, or months. It doesn't tend to work out that way in the UK. But yeah, it's not necessarily over, and it's not necessarily black and white.
And finally, has there ever been a case of something during an election that has completely shocked you, or something that may have looked like it's gone fine for the viewer but has gone spectacularly wrong behind the scenes, and you know, those kind of election night dramas that we hear about?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche to say, you know, it's a bit like a swan or whatever, where you hope it's all calm on the surface, but underneath the water you're paddling like crazy. There's always things going wrong. There's always tons of things going wrong all the time. That's called live broadcasting. The secret is to just be, as I say, nimble and flexible enough to keep the show on the road. If you're doing hours and hours of live broadcasting, captions are going to be wrong. You know, the graphics might not work. The outside sources aren't going to work. But to be honest, it's your job to keep on going, to tell the picture as you see it, to stay calm and be confident. And you know, it kind of fits into place.
Marco Callahan, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
So that was Marco Callahan giving us a real insight into what actually happens on election night. And I mean, it just shows you that there's a lot to do. We think it's so easy to keep people entertained, but that you get the exit poll at 10 o'clock and then you just get this lull until about 2 in the morning.
And I think it links back quite well to what we did with James Williams and about the green screen and the interesting graphics to keep people interested. And I think as part of their graphics at BBC Wales, they're going to have all the previous prime ministers up on the wall behind him as like a one big timeline, just, you know, kind of filler material to keep people engaged as to what's happening when, you know, perhaps there's not when there's not as many results coming in.
I enjoy the fact that, you know, in this filling time period, you get to know where the big battlegrounds are and where the marginal seats might be, and the ones which are definitely worth watching out for on the night itself. You know, these are the ones which probably keep us alive and keep us awake in the godly hours of the morning. Mm. You know, when you're waiting for that 3 o'clock declaration at, you know, I don't know, some random constituency somewhere, and somebody might lose their seat.
Yeah, you got Jeremy Vine dancing down an imaginary pavement,
yeah,
while paving stones fly out in front of him. I mean, it's like, we do laugh at it, but it does keep, yeah, you engaged, doesn't it? When, yeah, there's actually, objectively, there is nothing going on at that, yeah, time of the night.
And I just want to quickly mention as well, it's also quite fun watching, I believe it's Sunderland, who are always very keen to get their count in first, and they're running round everywhere. And I just think, yeah, great on you, but I'm not really that bothered to get it out first, if you know what I mean.
You're going to be best at something, don't you,
yeah,
in Sunderland? I know, I've heard so many Sunderland listeners there, but their football team is exceptionally bad at the minute. Anyway, moving on. We should also mention how Mark said that things do often go wrong, but that is just live broadcasting. I mean, I remember a story he told us just after he left the studio as he was leaving, he told us that you have to always have a plan B. And they once got into an election night at BBC Wales where they'd realised they hadn't got anywhere to broadcast from if there was a power cut at BBC Wales itself. And the only place they could then book out to have all the way through the night was these local squash courts. So they basically had three or four people that were ready to sprint over to the squash courts and broadcast from there if everything went wrong in the studio. And it just shows you how much planning and preparation can go into this. And although it looks so slick on camera, anything could be happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, us having mock production days here and how many things go wrong on the production days, it really makes you realise how many little tiny things go into a big production.
It's a very meticulous process when you think about it. You're going down to the right fine detail, whereas I think for us now, being on the other side, we've got a lot more appreciation for the little fine detail. Whereas before, when you're sitting at home, like we sort of mentioned the other week with the glasses on the set, you know, we just think, oh, it's a glass of water. Yeah, great politicians having a drink. But when we look at it from our side, from this side, it's an absolute car crash until it's resolved.
Yeah, and so we hope everything will go well on election night itself. And I think we should probably wrap up there because this has been a colossal episode. And it has also been our final episode for now.
Wait, so are we going to do predictions?
Or we should do some predictions. Let's okay, Chloe has reminded us that we should do some predictions, which will inevitably make us look stupid in about 3 days' time, but we should do them anyway. All right, I'm going to turn it around to you then, because you suggested it. You're first.
I hate to say this. I think it's going to be a hung parliament.
You think hung parliament?
I think
how
hung parliament.
Far short, roughly, do you think the Tories will be?
I think it'll be slim.
Ev?
I think Boris Johnson will have a majority. I don't think it'll be as big as people think it will be.
Give us a number.
Give you a number. I've said this number before. I'm going to go for 48.
Okay, 48. See, I'm torn between a hung parliament, which my head is telling me could happen, but then just all of the polling data looks so much like it won't be that. So because you've already bagged hung parliament, I'm going to go Boris Johnson majority of 33.
Can I say, though, if it is a hung parliament, I think the SNP will coalition with Labour.
You think there might be a minority government?
I think there could be a minority.
Oh, that's a big one. Well, we will have to come back after the election and do a wrapping up couple of episodes and maybe some more stuff if people are still listening to see how stupid we do look. It might not be straight after the election. It might be a little bit further when we come back after Christmas, but we will definitely be back. So all that's left to say is thank you so much, everyone who's listened in. It's been such a fun time for us covering our first election, and this podcast has made it 10 times more fun than it was going to be.
And thank you so much to everyone who we have badgered for interviews and has been so friendly and welcoming to talk to us. Everyone at the BBC, Adrian Masterson from ITV.
Yeah, Mark O'Callaghan, Roger Scully. Who else should we be thanking? Adrian Masterson again. Joe Swinson.
Felicity, James Williams,
yeah,
you know,
Felicity Evans,
everybody.
Rodri at BBC Wales. Everyone, thank you very much for having us and giving us a little insight into what it's like to cover an election. And so until after the night itself, we will say for one last time,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.